You know our next guest from his work in a TV series like Blue Bloods, NCIS, Major Crimes, and more. He's also the author of a terrific new book entitled The Gangster's Guide to Sobriety, My Life in 12 Steps. We're happy to be joined this afternoon by Richie Stevens. Richie, thank you so much for being with us.
Hello, Rich. How you doing? Thanks for inviting me on.
Well, it's wonderful to talk with you. I really enjoyed the book, and your story is a pretty powerful one. Let me see if I get this right. It took addiction, recovery, and then a broken back for you to become a successful actor.
Exactly. It wasn't your usual backstory you hear for actors. It's been a fairly crazy journey.
Well, it's quite a story of the book itself, too. How did you end up getting together with John Alshulter and Dave Krinsky?
So I met John Alshulter and Dave Krinsky a couple of years ago. I was helping a friend produce a comedy he had been working on, so I reached out to all the top comedy guys for that project, and that one wasn't a fit, but I told John some of my experiences. You know, before I got sober and became an actor, I had been involved in crime. You know, I was a wild man when I was young, and they thought it was really interesting, and we partnered up together, and we wrote the book together. I basically sent them a cold email. They didn't know me at all. It was kind of a strange way of meeting them.
And now they're also working on developing a TV series based on the book.
Yeah, that's the plan. We have a lot of people are interested in it at the moment, and we'll see where it ends up. Probably going to be a one-hour drama.
What was it? Was it John and Dave that suggested the idea of structuring the book to focus on the 12 steps?
Exactly. Yeah. Originally, I wrote down all my experiences from the age of about 15 up to 29. I got sober when I was 28, but it was really long. A lot of stuff was in it. We took it to a book agent, and she said, "This is an incredible story, but I don't know how to sell it." So John came up with the idea of rewriting the book based on the 12 steps, because that's how I got sober, by going to 12-step meetings. So you have a bit of recovery in every chapter, and you have a bit of insanity, too.
Well, yeah, and you start with grabbing us right by the shirt collar in the opening of the book when the whole thing almost came to an end. You're there in a car with a gun in your hand, thinking about ending it all, and then made what turned out to be a very fateful phone call to a friend named Bernard.
Exactly. In Ireland, we say Bernard, but right. Ireland, we say Bernard. I came close to dying a lot of times before I was lucky enough to get help. And this guy, you know, he saved my life. He took me to meetings and showed me another way of living.
And that first part of your life really started as a young man running the streets of Cavan. I laughed in reading the book because we had a big Irish population here in Bangor back in the day, and the toughest area of town was known as the Half Acre, just as it was in Cavan.
That's funny. I haven't heard of any other Half Acres. Yeah, up in Cavan, we call the bad area the Half Acre.
And you took your first drink at 15. That changed your life in a whole lot of ways. What was it about that made you want more?
Exactly. Well, you know, when I was young, I was very shy and didn't have a lot of self-confidence. I used to get pushed around at school. You know, I was kind of scared of people. And I went to a concert one time, one of those big festival concerts, and there was a bunch of bands like Beastie Boys and Garbage, and these kind of people. It was in the mid-90s. I was coming back on the bus, and this girl, she offered me a drink of beer. And I had never tried drinking before, and once I took that drink, it made me feel completely different. It was like, made me into a different person. I didn't care about what anybody thought about me. I didn't have any fear. It was just something that I had been looking for that I didn't know I was looking for. And the problem was I wanted to do it all the time, and I quickly became a big-time boozer, and one thing led to another, and that's where it all started. It did something for me that I had never experienced before.
We're talking
normal people. Like normal people, I think when they take a drink, it's a little bit of fun, but when an alcoholic takes a drink, it's something special, you know.
We're talking with Richie Stevens here on Downtown. How did you end up then in San Francisco building houses by day and selling cocaine and Viagra by night?
Well, it wasn't a straight line. I caused some trouble back home, and I started to think that maybe Ireland might be the problem. Maybe if I get out of Ireland, things would be different. And I got married really young to an American girl who lived in San Francisco. That's how I ended up there. But the problems came with me to America the same as they were in Ireland. And I even went to Australia at one point. I thought maybe America was the problem, and I went to Australia. But problems in Australia, too. I was the problem.
Well, then you begin the 12 steps, and let's start with that belief in a higher power that's essential. Was that a tough one for you?
Oh, absolutely. I was a complete atheist when I got sober, and I had been raised Catholic. You know, I was an altar boy when I was young, and I went to Catholic school, and my mother was a devout Catholic, but by the time I came to sobriety, I didn't believe that there could be any kind of a God or anything like that, so I was dead against it at the start. I thought these meetings were some kind of a cult or a religion, and it really scared me. I nearly didn't come back because I didn't want to become a Catholic again.
What did you learn about yourself when you had to do what's called a moral inventory?
Well, basically, part of getting sober is doing this moral inventory. You kind of write down a list of all the people, places, and things that you're mad at. And, you know, I had a lot of people, places, and things that I was mad at. I was full of resentment. And I had never really looked to see what my part was in a lot of it. You know, I kind of thought I was a nice guy. Maybe I was a victim. But I worked with my sponsor, and he helped me get through it. And, you know, for example, I had a grudge against this guy, Ollie. He was, back in the day, I used to sell drugs, and he was one of my employees, and he got caught by the cops, and then he set me up with the cops. So Ollie was the top of my list, you know. And my sponsor said, she was, who are you angry at? I said, I'm angry at Ollie. Why are you angry at him? I said, because he snitched on me to the cops. He says, what was your part in it? I said, I didn't have a part in it. I was a stand-up guy. I never snitched on anybody. And he said to me, he says, weren't you selling drugs? I said, yeah. He says, well, aren't drugs illegal? I said, yeah. He said, well, if you weren't selling drugs, he wouldn't have told on you. And that had never occurred to me. I was kind of coming out of the insanity at that point, you know.
How difficult was to accept that about yourself and to be able to admit that this is what I am?
Well, it was difficult in some ways. So if you admit that you have a problem with the booze and the drugs, the first thing is admitting you're powerless. Is number one, and number two is admitting your life is unmanageable. I kind of knew I was powerless from the beginning. When I was a kid and I started drinking them beers, I was like, this is the best thing ever. I want to do it all the time, and I don't care what happens. I kind of knew I was powerless over it from the beginning, but I didn't admit that my life was unmanageable until the very end. You know, to an outsider looking at where my life was going, it was obvious that somebody who wants to end their life has an unmanageable life, you know. So finally, at the very end, after multiple suicide attempts and all kinds of chaos within my life, I was finally able to admit this. I don't know how to live my life, and I need to find out a different way to behave.
And as you write, one of the hardest part is that drugs are fun. And as you said, you could be, for a guy who grew up shy, you could be very entertaining under the influence.
Apparently so, you know. But obviously, if they weren't fun, people wouldn't be doing them. but the thing is, I would never preach to anybody because it would be completely hypocritical of me to criticize other people for doing it. You know, my story isn't about preaching to people. My story is just about what happened to me, and this is how I got out of it. You know, and there's a difference between someone who can casually take a few drinks and nothing happens, they don't get arrested, they don't end up in fights, they don't end up in the hospital, normal person, that doesn't happen to them. But if you have a problem with the sauce, then you see all these kind of consequences. And that was my story.
And you write that getting sober is a very confusing time. Can you explain that?
It definitely is, because if you're a boozer and a drug taker, it's kind of how you deal with everything in your life. Like, for example, if you're happy, you can go for a few scoops to celebrate. If you're sad, you go for a few scoops to drown your sorrows. Or if you're upset about something, or, you know, even if you're just bored. For me, drinking and using was about every time I had a feeling, I needed to drink something or snort something or smoke something. So when a person gets sober, that you're taking away the person's medicine. Like, that was my medicine for how I lived my life, and then I had to figure out how to do everything without drinking. You know, when I first got sober, my buddy Bernard, he says we're gonna go for coffee. What do you mean we're gonna go for coffee? Like, you're gonna go to the coffee shop and we're gonna have a coffee. Well, I said, what are we gonna do there? He says, we're gonna talk and drink coffee. And that was completely alien to me. I was 28 years of age at that point, and I don't think I had ever sat in a coffee shop and had a coffee with someone. Like, for me, I would go for a beer, like, because those kind of social situations used to make me nervous and anxious. So even something as simple as that, going for a cup of coffee, made me feel weird. So it was definitely a big change, taking away the medicine I was used to getting figuring out how to do things like a normal person.
One of the last steps in the process of recovery is making amends. Did you find that difficult?
Oh, absolutely, because I was a criminal and I hadn't been caught for most of the things that I had done. So I was worried about that one. I didn't want to go to jail. And we had some very difficult ones for sure. You know, like, one of the things was I robbed a valuable painting one time. I had got away with it. As soon as I robbed it, I mailed it back to some friends in Ireland for some safekeeping. We got to this amends step, and I had this valuable painting. It was worth a fortune. And I knew I couldn't keep it because it didn't belong to me. And part of getting sober was making right the things you had done wrong. So I got it sent back to me from Ireland, and I had to try and figure out a way of giving it back without going to jail, without getting caught. I couldn't just go, "Hey, sorry, stole this, please don't arrest me," you know? So I asked my sponsor, and he didn't know how to do it. And he asked his sponsor, and his sponsor didn't know either. But the good thing, if you're sober, you meet all kinds of people in the room for sobriety. You meet doctors, I mean, you can meet lawyers and cops and all kinds of people. So I talked to all sorts of people to try and figure out how to give this painting back, and eventually we figured it out, and I did the right thing, I gave it back, and it was the most valuable thing I ever owned, but that's like $1 million getting rid of it, I'll tell you that.
So do you think that you'll be helping people by sharing your story, that others can see that there's a way out of addiction?
Yeah, that's the whole idea of the book, Rich. You know, I kept it quiet for a long time. Like, I'm not proud of the things I have done, but it's part of my story. And if people do have a problem with either drinking or substances or whatever, they can see that there is a solution. And, you know, if you think you're bad, look at how bad I was, you know. even if you don't have a problem, if you like a good story, or if you have a dark sense of humor like I do, you might enjoy it too. I would say it's not for young kids or anything like that. Fairly explicit.
Oh, yes.
I wouldn't be giving it to somebody very young. There's lots of cussing and craziness in it. But if you enjoy a good story, if you have a dark sense of humor, I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a powerful book, and at times very, very funny as well. Now, you have played in your acting career people on both sides of the law. What do you think producers saw in you, and directors that made them think you could understand that world?
Well, I think I have that look, you know, because of my past life. I think it telegraphs the very first role I got as an actor was where I was tied to a chair and getting beaten to a pulp by some gangsters. The director who picked me for that, Weston, he didn't know about my past, but he just thought that I had that look. And I didn't want to scare him, so I didn't tell him anything about it. I still have bite marks on my nose from a time when people came into my house and held me down and beat me to a pulp and bit my face. And, you know, so I think I obviously have that look. And so that's what they usually hire me for, either bad guy or sometimes I'll play the cop who arrests the lead. So even though I'm a cop, I'm probably kind of a bad cop. And any of your listeners who are listening and don't know who I am, usually I don't play Irish roles. I do all the accents. So I play Americans or Russians or Germans. So if you don't recognize my voice, if you take a look at my IMDb, you'll see the kind of roles I've been in.
And part of that is your versatility. Well, you speak, what, 5-6 languages?
Yeah, I speak Irish, English, a little bit of French, German, a little Spanish, and a little Russian. But I don't really get to use the languages too much, but I'm pretty good at the accents. I've always been able to do different accents, so that comes in handy, because there's not a huge demand for Irish guys in Hollywood.
Well, we're so happy to see that you're on the other side of the challenges you faced. You love your work as an actor, and the book is an absolutely terrific read. It's entitled The Gangster's Guide to Sobriety, My Life in 12 Steps. Richie, great to talk with you. Thank you so much for sharing your story, and we look forward to seeing this on the screen at some time in the future.
Thank you so much, Rich. It was lovely talking to you, and hope everybody has a great day.
Thank you, Richie. Richie Stevens here on Downtown.